This meeting of the Legislative Council to order. Today is January 13th, 2022 at 2:05 p.m. Ms. Kiesel, can you call the roll?
Representative Clayman.
Here.
Representative Edgman.
Here.
Representative Foster.
Here.
Speaker Stutes.
Here.
Representative Tilton. Representative Tuck.
Here.
Senator Bishop.
Here.
Senate President Michikee.
Here.
Senator Hoffman. Senator Hughes. Senator Schauer.
Here.
Senator Stedman.
Here.
Senator Stevens.
Here.
Vice Chair Reinbold.
Here.
Chair Hannon.
Here.
12 members present.
We have a quorum to conduct business.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Clayman.
Representative Clayman here. I move that Legislative Council rescind our action in failing to approve the transfer of funds for 2022 session per diem, which took place on December 16, 2021 at the meeting of this council.
That motion is debatable. Is there anyone who would like to speak to the motion?
Could you please read the full motion?
The motion is to rescind our action that took place on December 16th.
Correct. Can you please, Madam Chair, read the motion that took place on December 16th?
I can. That's a little out of order, but I will reprise it now. The motion that we are discussing rescinding was the motion, a move that Legislative Council approve a transfer of $1,995 from existing legislative capital funds to the legislative operating budget salaries and allowances allocation for the purposes of paying FY22 legislator session per diem. I further move that Legislative Council support the restoration of the Governor's FY2022 veto in a supplemental appropriation. Once appropriated, the transfer would be reversed.
Thank you.
Any discussion of the motion to rescind?
Madam Chair, can we just have the maker of the motion sort of explain the impacts just for anyone that may be listening, including myself.
Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Senator Michikee, and thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of the motion would, in light of the governor's veto of the legislature's per diem for the 22 session, this would allow the legislature to pay per diem to our members now at the beginning of session, and then it would be essentially reimbursed later in the year when we appropriate the money in either a supplemental or other action by the legislature.
Let me just put on the record that Representative Tilton has joined us. Any other discussion of the motion to rescind action?
Yes, Member Senator Schauer.
Senator Schauer, go ahead.
Thank you for the motion for Representative Clayman. Can you just verify, because I missed that meeting, I was overseas, is this just for regular session per diem only? Not a special session and nothing to do with 2021. Is that correct? This is regular session only, 2022.
And Senator Schauer, this is Chair Hannon, and I'm going to answer that question because it's not really part of the motion, but yes, the original motion that did not pass is just the regular session per diem.
Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure what I was voting on. I'm trying to get it clear. Thanks.
And it's for 2022, nothing to do with 2021.
Further discussion of the motion to rescind.
Well, this is Senator Stevens, if you can hear me.
Yes. Go ahead, Senator Stevens.
Well, it just makes sense to do it this way. I mean, the other option was to wait until a supplemental was passed, but as you recall in an earlier meeting, the co-chair of the Senate Finance indicated that that might not happen until very late in the session, and so you did have people spending a whole session, up to 120 days, without receiving per diem. That would be, it'd be unfair to so many people. So I think it's an excellent motion, and I intend to vote for it.
Are you prepared now for the vote on the motion to rescind? It is not a vote on the main motion on the per diem matter directly. It is a parliamentary action to rescind that vote that would bring us back to that place to debate the motion on per diem.
So just for clarity, Madam Chair, a yes vote puts it back before us, the main motion.
Correct. A yes vote rescinds our action, therefore placing that original motion back before us. A no vote keeps it failed. Unless anyone objects, I'm going to ask Ms. Kiesel for a roll call on the vote on the motion to rescind.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Speaker Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Tilton.
No.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Senator Bishop.
Yes.
Senate President Michicki.
Yes.
Senator Schauer.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Vice Chair Reinbold.
Yes.
Chair Hannon.
Yes.
13 yeas, 0 nays.
I believe we have one mistallied, with Representative Tilton being a no vote.
I'm sorry. 12 yeas, 1 nay.
Thank you. So with that, the motion to rescind has passed. That places the original motion back before us. I'm going to read it one more time. The original motion that is now before us is, I move that the Legislative Council approve the transfer of $1,995,000 from existing legislative capital funds to the legislative operating budget salary and allowances allocation for the purpose of paying FY22 legislator session per diem. I further move that Legislative Council support the restoration of the governor's FY22 veto in a supplemental appropriation. Once approved, the transfer would be reversed. The motion is before us for debate. Members seeking the floor.
Madam Chair, Senator Schauer.
Senator Schauer, go ahead.
I'll go ahead and jump in here, see if we can generate some debate. So I wrote a letter to the board that was looking at our compensation, and while I do think that per diem is probably a tad high, I can give some examples, and I did to the board. Some of us, if you're not wealthy, retired, you know, with a solid income, or you're lucky enough to have a spouse that works so you can do this job, when I lose 4 to 5 months of income from my primary job doing this, it literally puts me into where I'm using my credit cards so to pay them off. And so I think that for the broader debate, as talking with Senate President Michicki, that there are certain members that actually get, it's very difficult to serve. And my concern is we would put legislators that want to serve but need another job because of where they are in their professional lives, you make it nearly impossible to serve if you don't fall into one of those other categories. And so I can give an example right now for this group. $1,100 every 2 weeks, which is what my pay is, with little to no per diem or a cap per diem, I'm paying over $11,000 to rent an apartment for the next 4 months. I can't afford that without some other means of income, and I lose it for 4 or 5 months of my other job. So while I'm not trying to make this a philosophical discussion, I believe that we have to be very careful with our money, but per diem's there for a reason, folks. It's there to help people offset the cost of having to live someplace else, but they still have their bills at home. I'm not telling anybody here something that they don't already know. However, this is more for the public at home because they get mad about per diem and what happens, and they have to understand that for some of us, this is the only way we can do this job, is to be able to offset the cost. And I do believe, as I told the board, we could make that skinnier. I don't think you need $300 a day per diem, $9,000 a month, but average it out over the year, it drops significantly, and they propose to pay cut. So I support this because I support a citizen legislature, and many citizen legislators cannot afford this job for 4+ months out of the year if there's some means that does not offset having to pay for everything at home and there. So I know that's a long diatribe, Chair, and I appreciate you letting me say that, but I think it's important to get that on the public record. Thank you.
Thank you. Other members seeking the floor?
Madam Chairman, Stedman here.
Representative Stedman, and then I'll come to, Senator Stedman, and then I'll come to Representative Chilton.
Well, this is kind of an anomaly this year in that, you know, the governor vetoed this per diem for the legislature, and we've always had separate, more of a gentleman's agreement over multiple governors that we let the particular branch of government run their own affairs, executive branch and the legislature being two different ones. In this case, he crossed over and vetoed the legislature's per diem. He did not change and veto his own per diem, his own branch of government. So I think we need to reconstitute this per diem and go ahead and move forward through the session. And however the mechanism is that replaces the funding that we're going to be using out of our capital account has yet to be seen, but we'll work together collectively in the legislature on that and get it in one of the budgets. So I am in favor of this. It's unfortunate that's even before Ledge Council. And to Senator Powers' comment, there is quite a few legislators that make significantly less than Senator Schauer and would be unable to even afford anywhere close to serving in Juneau. Some of them are married with family, some of them are married without young children. But there's no way you could do this job at that salary level and come down to Juneau and rent a second household. It would be very difficult to run a household at just a normal salary if you stayed in Anchorage and could shop at Costco all the time. So I'm in favor of this, Madam Chairman, and I hope it is supported with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't disagree with what the previous two speakers have indicated. There is definitely a high cost to coming to Juneau. We all know that the cost of rents are very expensive here, and being away from your own family and having to maybe rent another place to live when you're paying a mortgage at home, and it's not like other states where you can just drive back and forth. It is definitely a matter of having to fly back home, and that's a cost of a ticket. So while I do definitely understand the costs of coming to Juneau, and I do know that there is also the broader picture of the Compensation Committee looking at what the per diem should be, I feel that this particular motion could be resolved, because it is in the supplemental budget, and it could be resolved easily by just getting the supplemental budget taken care of early on. I understand from previous discussion that sometimes that isn't something that happens, but perhaps that would be motivation to get it done. I don't necessarily agree with the fact that it was vetoed in the first place, but that's not what we're speaking about now. What we're speaking about now is that there is a line item in the supplemental for the replacement of the per diem, and what I heard from the motion is that encouraging this Ledge Council to support that line item, but there are also other things in that supplemental that should be taken care of immediately as well, and so that is the reason at this point in time I'm not in support of the motion.
Other members seeking the floor?
Senator Reinbold.
Go ahead, Senator.
So just a couple points. This was brought up at our town hall last week, and I don't understand fully of what's going on with the salaries and changing the per diem, I think, to $100 and bumping our salary up. My first question is that going to be impacted? Is anyone aware before I proceed with my next two questions?
It doesn't. It hasn't been determined. My understanding is that the Compensation Commission meets again on Monday, and then there's a 60-day period for legislative action if we reject their final proposal.
Okay. Thank you. That is very helpful. And I will say I'm leaning more towards voting in favor of this because I do believe that the branches of government, especially the last 2 years, have gotten intertwined, and I think it's very dangerous. And 95%, I believe, of the budget is the executive branch. I think the legislative is about 2%. And as much as I understand the concerns with the per diem, and I wouldn't mind it getting knocked down some because I actually want the capital, the legislature actually, to be moved. However, that's not the issue it's before us right now. So leading that way, I believe I will be supporting.
Other members seeking the floor.
Senator Stevens here.
Senator Stevens, go ahead.
No, just because we passed this does not mean that everyone has to apply for per diem. It's an application process. You put in whether you want per diem or not. You know, in the past, there have been certain legislators that have decided not to take per diem because maybe they're independently wealthy or they don't need it, or maybe even they have a moral objection to per diem. But I believe everyone that's on Legislative Council now receives per diem and has in the past. So just remember that it's something you apply for, and anyone who chooses not to receive per diem will not receive it.
So, Senator Stevens, I know that not all members of the Legislative Council receive per diem, I being one of them. And then, Ms. Geary, could you address whether regular session per diem, do members have to apply, or could you expand on that point? Because I had a slightly different understanding.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Council. For the record, Jessica Geary, Executive Director of Legislative Affairs Agency. During a regular session, per diem is, is paid automatically, though members always have the option to reject per diem by issuing something in writing to the accounting office.
Madam Chair, Representative Clayman to comment.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Representative. Let me just make sure. Senator Stevens, do you need a follow-up?
No, I understand that. And okay. During interim or beyond the regular session, people are required to put in for per diem. Isn't that true?
That is correct. This action, though, is only the regular session per diem. All right. Representative Clayman. We had several senators
in
the room.
I would just note that in question, Senator Reinbold's question about the salary commission, their action only affects 2023. Their action in terms of changing salary and per diem would take effect after the next election. So it won't have any effect this year. And I think one of the important reasons to why I'll be supporting this is that it's a minority of members in the House and Senate that actually bring their family to Juneau. There was a time when most of the legislature brought their family to Juneau. But a reduction in per diem or not paying, getting per diem started right away really disadvantages those legislators that actually bring their families to Juneau. And I think it's really essential for some of the families that do have kids that we have those representatives and senators with us. And I do think it really puts an undue hardship on those folks if we don't get per diem started as we're starting session. So I'll be voting yes on this motion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other members seeking the floor? Hearing and seeing no one else seeking the floor, I believe we are ready for a roll call vote. Ms. Kiesel, please call the roll.
Representative Clayman?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Speaker Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Tilton.
No.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Senator Bishop.
Yes.
Senate President Michiki.
I'm sorry, that broke up. Can you repeat that name?
Senate President Michiki, please.
Ah, that's what I thought you said. Yes.
Senator Schauer.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Vice Chair Reinbold.
Yes.
Chair Hannon.
Yes.
12 yeas, 1 nay.
With 12 yeas and 1 nay, the motion has prevailed. That brings us to approval of the agenda. Senator Michiki, Do you have a motion for us? Senator Machicki?
Chair?
Do you have a motion on the agenda?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move and ask unanimous consent that Legislative Council approve the agenda as presented.
Hearing and seeing no objections, the agenda is approved. The first item on our agenda is a review of the COVID mitigation policy and related matters. Our Executive Director, Jessica Geary, is on hand for discussion of the COVID mitigation policy. You should have in your packets what our current COVID mitigation policy is. And we do have we should have Dr. Hennessy available to us to address questions if we have them. He is not currently online, but we can begin.
Madam Chair, Senator Schauer.
Go ahead, Senator Schauer.
Yeah, I was overseas on Tuesday when this email was sent out, so I did not see it until this morning for the council meeting. And I had hoped through Senator Machicki, President Machicki, when he asked to have this debate, that we would have a chance to have a few other experts online to call and answer questions, so it was not just one perspective. I've asked the same thing of the ECHO panel. So far that hasn't happened, different topic. But there are there's an epidemiologist and a health expert from Anchorage, I believe, are also on the line, had called in. I am requesting that they be allowed, if there is questions, to also answer, just so that we had a broader, because that was our part of the request, was to have that broader perspective, not just from one person, but several, where there might be differing opinions. So with your permission, I would hope that we could allow them to answer questions if something might go towards those doctors, especially if Dr. Hennessy isn't on the line. They should be available.
Senator Schauer, as you recollect, the reason that this policy is here is at the request of members to put the policy before you. I have no specific proposals nor issues. We have vetted one doctor who has advised us for the last 2 years on the development of our COVID protocols in process, and we've continued that relationship with Dr. Hennessy through his generosity to donate his time to us. So do you have a question about our current mitigation policy? Or do you have a proposal to amend it?
Well, there are several that are gonna come up, but I wanted to have the debate first. And the question I have is, you just said it there, Chair, and that is that you've had one person, and there is a much broader opinion about whether the efficacy of masks is useful, what type of mask we should be wearing, social distancing, the various shots, et cetera, vaccination rates, all of those different things. And I was hoping to have what would be a differing perspective, if it exists, for the epidemiologist that's, I believe, on the line, that were able to answer questions as well. They may not, and if there's no specific questions, that's fine. I'm only asking that we'd be allowed to have what may be a countering viewpoint or a differing one for the efficacies of those different things while we have the debate.
So, Senator Schauer, I'm going to remind the committee that we are not debating COVID. We are not debating state policies. We are simply addressing the policy that affects this complex and these workers. We are not here, nor are we engaging in executive branch powers or agencies or... So, if you have a specific action, if you want to amend the policy, or if you have a specific question to address, please raise it.
Senator Stevens. So my question would be, what is the City of Juneau requirements? Are we out of compliance in our current plan? Are we in compliance with? We are the guests of the City of Juneau, City and Borough. And I want to make sure that we are doing things as the city council, or the borough assembly, I guess, has decided.
Yes, the city of borough of Juneau's policy is that in indoor settings, people are masked. Indoor public settings.
And Madam Chair, I think then as a part of the community, and certainly appreciate generosity of the community of Juneau, I think we need to comply with the rules that they have established.
Madam Chair, this is Senator Michicki.
Senator Michicki, go ahead.
I just want to remind, and this is with all due respect to my very close friend, Senator Stevens, but I do want to remind the body that the Ledge Council is representing the legislature in a building that is not subject to the laws of the city and borough of Juneau.
I'd like us to constrain our discussion to our COVID mitigation policy. Are there members who would like to make a motion, or you have a question about our current mitigation policy?
Madam Chair, this is Senator Reinbold.
Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. I have 13 questions. I have emailed them recently in the very right about 5 minutes ago to your office. And I have sent a letter to Dr. Zink about a month ago, not quite a month ago, with 13 critical questions. And they are directly related to this policy. And for example, I'll read the first couple of them, and I would like to be
so hold on. So we do not have the questions before us. Dr. Zink is not with us. And again, I'm going to remind the members that unless the questions directly tie to our COVID mitigation policy, I'm going to rule them out of order. Our debate on this issue is exclusively about our mitigation policy that we are in charge of. So go ahead and give the first question.
Okay, provide all clinical evidence regarding the isolated COVID-19 virus and the known variants and the method at which these variants have been identified and isolated.
I'm going to rule that question out of order. It is not related to our policy. Next question, Senator Reinbold.
Well, it's very, very critical. If the mask is, we'll talk about the second question. Provide all available clinical evidence that masks have been successful in preventing the spread of COVID-19, including masks that have been the most effective in preventing the spread of COVID-19. In addition, provide the means by which this evidence was confirmed, along with available information provided by the mask manufacturer concerning the use of masks for this purpose. And this is
so again, Senator, that is not a question about our policy. You are asking for piles of research that are not under the jurisdiction of our legislative affairs agency, nor under our policy. So I'm going to rule it out of order. Next question, please.
The next question is provide all available clinical evidence that proves social distancing has been effective in stopping the spread of COVID-19 and the sources of this clinical evidence.
Social distancing is not referenced in our policy, and I'm going to rule the question out of order.
Okay, I think it's completely, right. There's signs all over,
okay.
At least last session, they were all over.
All right, so.
The social distance. So provide all available clinical evidence that COVID-19 vaccines are in fact true traditional vaccines, and they provide immunity and not experimental.
So, Senator Reinbold, I'm just going to clarify that we do not have an email from you. My staff nor myself have not received one. And you're asking for resources, but you're not actually phrasing a statement, a question. So,
okay. Well, I'm going to.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead and
may I break in for just one moment?
Senator Sauer.
Thank you. I'm reading the policy while we're talking.
Yes, and we hear, I made a mistake. Social distancing is referenced.
That's the point. Thank you.
Masks are as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
Then how in the world can question number two be ruled out of order if that's the rub.
Your statement was provide the clinical evidence. Our policy.
Correct.
I'd like you to address our policy. Do you want? Can you rephrase it so you're addressing our policy?
Where I'm trying to go with this is if someone chooses to wear a mask, I think they should wear one. But requiring it, we need the clinical evidence that they work. And the bottom line is I believe in medical choice. Most of us have either had COVID or vaccinated or whatever. And the point of this is a masquerade. You guys know it. A lot of times people are not wearing them in their offices. They're not wearing them in meetings. They're pulling them down. They're touching them. They're full of bacteria. They're not being used like they are in surgical settings, et cetera. And it is just ridiculous to be testing people in the building every 4 days and requiring it and then not having the public. So it just, you know, just a lot of the stuff is just not making any sense. It's driving the cost up. It's illegal to mandate something that is under emergency use. And the masks, you know, the science is all over the place on the masks. At the best science is it can possibly reduce it a little bit, but it can also create tremendous steam on people's glasses. They can't hear properly, concentration, lower oxygen levels, et cetera. So they can have some acne on the face. They can have all sorts of negative side effects. And so I would move that masks are optional in the Capitol building, in addition to testing.
Okay, so Senator Reinbold, if you want to rephrase that as a motion, use the magic words.
I move that masks and
I move to amend the policy
so that masks and PCR testing are available but optional.
Okay, we have a motion to amend the policy before us. Do you want to speak to you?
Second,
Madam Chair. This is Machicki. I move that we separate the question.
Okay. Senator Reinbold, are you okay with the separation of the question, so mask and PCR testing as two separate motions?
Can Senator Machicki explain why?
I think there's different logic in both areas, and I actually want to discuss the testing option at length. Well, not at length. I don't discuss anything at length, but I do have some points about required cycle testing later that I think are separate than the mask issue.
Well, I prefer they're together, but I know we have to go with the will of the body, so.
Well, if you, I need to take a brief at ease. I can't read. We're back on the record. I needed to just check parliamentary-wise. The motion to separate is not a debatable motion, so it is before us. The motion from Senator Machicki is to split Senator Reinbold's motion to amend. Ms. Kiesel, roll call vote on that motion, please.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Speaker Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Tilton.
Yes.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Senator Bishop. Senator Bishop.
Yes.
Senate President Machicki.
Yes.
Senator Schauer.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Vice Chair Reinbold.
No.
Chair Hannon.
Yes.
12 yeas, 1 nay.
So with 12 yeas and 1 nay, the motion has been split. So we have two motions. One is to, the order that Senator Reinbold spoke to them was mask first, and Senator Reinbold, would you reprise your motion and exclusively to just the mask? Is it to delete that entire section of our COVID policy?
Chair Hannon, I move that masks are optional in the COVID-19 mitigation policy.
Okay. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question would be, is that for just people that work in this building, or is that for people that come in from, is that the public that might come into the building as well?
Madam Chair, could you please ask her to get closer to the microphone? I could not hear a word she said. Thank you.
I'm sorry. How about now? My question is, does that policy change affect only people, legislators and staff, people in this building, or people from the public that might be coming to visit the building as well?
I believe that question is addressed to me. I think that's a very good question, because the PCR testing, again, just like...
Senator Reinbold, we're speaking only to the masks.
It's whether the PCR tests are for both the public and the people, the masks. I would make them all optional but available.
Okay. Other members who would like to speak on the motion to delete the make masks optional?
Senator Stevens here.
Excuse me. Senator Representative Stutes had a follow-up, and I skipped over, so I'm letting do a follow-up. And then I'll come to you, Senator Stevens.
I'm sorry. I guess if it's optional and it pertains to the public as well as individuals in the building, what is the purpose of the masks then? I'm a little confused here. I thought the idea of the masks were to protect others and somewhat protect yourself, but if it's a hit or miss, I'm a little confused as to the benefit.
Senator Stevens.
Madam Chair, this is not my academic area at all, but I have to depend on what I hear from other folks. Dr. Jones here in Kodiak was on the radio yesterday and talking about how he always wears a mask in Safeway. And he's saying not that he wears a mask for himself, but that he wears it for other people because he's exposed to the disease when in his line of work. So his point was that what he said is that people should just grow up and wear masks to protect other people. I think that was a strong statement to me, and so I would be in favor of continuing the mask policy. But I do think since we have our expert epidemiologist here, I would like to hear from Dr. Hennessy on the issue of masks before we vote.
Okay, we do have Dr. Hennessy online with us now. Dr. Hennessy is an epidemiologist who worked for the CDC for a number of years running the Arctic, I'm going to get this wrong, the director of the Arctic Investigation Program, the CDC's Laboratory for Infectious Diseases located in Anchorage. He's a graduate of Antioch College, the Mayo Medical School, and Emory University School of Public Health, and the CDC Epidemic Intelligence Service. Dr. Hennessy, were you able to hear the question that Senator Stevens would like to have you address, which is the efficacy of masks being protective?
Yes, Madam Chair. Can you hear me all right?
Perfectly. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Yes, I heard Senator Stevens' question and comment, and I agree with the physician from Kodiak that there's a strong evidence that masks provide benefit and that there is a strong scientific consensus that masks help prevent transmission of COVID. They really work in two ways. Many people with COVID are asymptomatically infected and yet can still spread the virus. So putting a mask on that person is a matter of source control. It's why we do this in medical facilities. We have people wear a mask so they don't spread the virus inadvertently. And so there's a value in preventing the spread of it from that way. And then for the wearer of a mask, encountering somebody who may be infected, there's a reduction in the risk of acquiring COVID for the mask wearer. And so the best situation is really to have everyone masked, since about 50% of transmission of COVID occurs from people who don't yet know that they have the infection. And since that's the situation with influenza also, we know that mask use can prevent the spread in those settings. So I think making masks optional exposes the legislature and your staffers to increased risk of COVID transmission and threatens transmission and an outbreak in your setting. So I think the most conservative approach would be to maintain the mask requirement as is endorsed by public health and scientific and medical experts.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Reinbold, I've got a cue. I have Representative Tilton right now, and then I'll come back to you. Representative Reinbold, Representative Tilton, the woman I'm looking at.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can appreciate the information we just received from Dr. Hennessy, but I will also say that the last meeting that we were at, and one of the reasons I think we had asked for some different viewpoints is because there is also currently an article out that was put out on CNN that says that face masks are basically just a face decoration and really are not effective with the Omicron virus. So going back to Senator Shower's request to have some different viewpoints, I would follow up on that. And I would hope that, I think that there is somebody online that could give us another viewpoint, because back when we had our meeting, our Ledge Council meeting, our last meeting, between the hours of 2 hours in and 2:30 or maybe 2:45, we had talked about having an expert. I believe that Senator Stevens had asked for that, but I also believe that Senator Shower and Senator Reinbold and myself and several others had asked for some other viewpoints to be come forward. Now, there wasn't a specific motion on that, but I thought that the indication was that we would be looking at more than one person being the expert on that. With that, I would also say that even with masking here in the city and borough of Juneau, even with masking and a high level of vaccination rate here, Juneau has a really high rate of the virus right now, and it's just something that is going to happen. So if, in fact, masking and vaccination and all that is working, there should not be a high rate here. And so if you compare that to other areas, such as the area where I am from, where we don't have any kind of mandatory masking or vaccination, it's interesting that, you know, if you look at statistics across the board, we don't have a high rate in comparison. So I guess that's why I would support optional masking. There are some people who are going to feel better and, would feel better about masking. For myself, and I think for all of the public, it should be a personal responsibility. I do agree with Senator Stevens. I mean, when he said that, there are places that I would maybe go into that would be maybe a senior center where there might be some older folks who might be, it might be transmitted to more easily, that, I would be personally responsible and think about that before I went there. So with that, I would just request that we look at this being an optional.
And let me just make sure, Representative Tilton, that you know that Juneau only restored an indoor masking mandate on Monday of this week, so well into the Omicron surge that we are experiencing here. Senator Reinbold.
So this question would be directed toward Mr. Hennessy. Dr. Hennessy, you said that there was asymptomatic transmission. I would like all the clinical data and proof of that. That is very suspect. And second, I would like to know all the clinical evidence, including the type of masks, how to wear them. It's the question that I proposed. Did you hear to Dr. Zink? If not, I can reread it to you. But I would like the answers for you to be able to back it up with clinical research and cite your references.
Senator Reinbold, I'm going to rule your question as deleterious and out of order because it does not pertain to our policy. You are free to disagree with them and vote against. Well, it's
Chair
your
Hammond.
Motion.
Senator Schauer.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you. I have a question. I would like to see if Dr. Savitt is on the line. He's been listening, and he might have a different opinion about, and this is related to the mask policy.
I understand, Senator Schauer, but I'm going to tell you as the chairperson, I am not going to allow witnesses that I have not previously spoken with nor vetted. So I am not going to turn a question to him.
So we're going to get a one-sided debate here, again, with one person and no broad background.
Senator Schauer.
This is a travesty.
Senator Schauer, you are actively
in proof.
Senator Schauer and Senator Reinbold, I feel like you can adequately address your points and articulate them well. Dr. Hennessy referenced a question. You do not have to take his advice, and I don't think his words are swaying your vote, but you're doing an adequate job of raising your concern. Is there another member of the council who would like to raise a point, make their argument, or ask a specific question of Dr. Hennessy with regard to our policy?
I have a specific question for Dr. Hennessy, Chair Hanna.
Go ahead, Senator Schauer.
Dr. Hennessy, related to the Pandemic Response Task Force chart, which describes how masks of different types work, can you discuss what benefit or lack we may see based on the types of masks? Because the policy basically is a cloth mask. I'm looking right at the chart here that says a cloth mask, which is essentially what the legislature wears, gives you a time of infectious dose for somebody not infected with COVID of 27 minutes. The only thing that I see on this chart produced by the federal government that discusses that we would have any kind of reasonable time limit that would protect us in being on the floor, being in committee meetings where we routinely do not meet the guidance of 6 feet for X amount of minutes or hours, but be fitted N95 mask to fitted N95 mask, which could give you up to 25 hours, or any option of surgical fitted mask, N95, et cetera. But it is crystal clear that with the current policy, with cloth mask only, the maximum time gives you is 27 minutes. And that does not seem as if that follows the science. Could you please comment on this federally produced chart that talks about what types of masks would actually protect us if we're going to have a mask policy? Thank you.
Dr. Hennessy, you could address whether that the summation, as Senator Schauer phrased it, whether our policy with cloth masks would be adequate or not.
Through the chair, I'm not familiar with, nor do I have the document that Senator Schauer is referencing, but I can comment about the variety of types of masks and the degrees of protection which they provide. First of all, I think it's really important that what we talk about with masks, that in terms of protection, it's not an all or nothing. There's a reason why we have social distancing with masking, with vaccination, with hand washing as layers of protection, because not any one of those is 100% protective all of the time. However, just like a seatbelt not being 100% protective all the time, having seatbelts, airbags, well-functioning brakes as layers of protection provide a better chance of surviving a car crash. So with regard to masks, there are different recommendations about qualities of masks. Double layer fabric barriers are better than single layer fabric barriers. N95 or respirators are better than double layered masks in terms of filtration and prevention of inoculum either being or virus either leaving a person's face area or somebody inhaling it. However, some people are unable to wear the N95 masks. Sometimes they're not available. And some people with respiratory problems would not be appropriate to wear those masks. So that's why there's a range of options recommended by CDC about types of masks. And I believe your policy does reference those with approved types of masks. And if somebody could wear an N95 mask and was comfortable wearing it, it would provide a higher level of protection than a double layer mask or a single cotton layer of mask.
Follow up, Chair Hannon, for that question.
Go ahead, Senator Schauer.
Thank you. Dr. Hennessy, this does come from the CDC and the Pandemic Response Task Force. I know you may not have seen every chart. There's plenty of them out there. I would like to read this, Chair Hannon, just so the doctor can respond to it, because it is just based on the numbers. I just want to get his take on it.
Senator Schauer, you should submit it to the committee, and we could have shared it, but I am not going to have you asking questions about a document that he does not have the ability to view.
Well, Madam Chair, I believe he knows this information already. He was responding to it.
Then ask.
I'll just ask one follow-up without reading it. Is that acceptable?
That would be acceptable.
Thank you. Dr. Hennessy, based on your answer there, this is very clear, this chart, and I know you don't see it, so I can't read it to you, but it is from the CDC, and it says cloth face coverings to cloth face coverings only provide 27 minutes of protection, and then, like I said, you can go up from N95 to N95, et cetera. You can get more time, obviously, if you have a more fitted mask that filtrates the particles to the appropriate micron level. The CDC itself says that, you know, 6 feet inside of those numbers, then you're not protected. You're going to, you know, either spread it through the release around the mask because they're not fitted, and or in the amount of time, especially, and this is my question to you, related to inside the legislature, how we sit together in committee meetings and on the floor. Is the cloth mask enough? Because this chart suggests it is not. 27 minutes of protection with our current policy does not seem like it works. And while I'm not sitting here advocating I want everybody wearing respirators, a policy that only has cloth to cloth clearly does not protect us according to the guidance, the science. Could you please comment on that?
Through the chair, again, I'm not familiar with the document that the Senator is referencing. We can't view it at this point, so I can't provide specific response to that question. And again, I would just point out that protection is not a matter of absolutes. I'm not familiar with the 27-minute timeline in terms of masks. It's generally better for both individuals who might be interacting to be masked. Higher quality masks, such as N95s, are certainly better than cloth masks. But cloth masks have been established to provide a barrier for droplet spread and to protect the individual wearer. So I think there's levels of protection. The least level of protection is nobody wearing a mask. It would be better if both people wore masks, and it'd be better if possible if both people could be wearing an N95 mask if they were appropriately trained and fit to wear one.
All right, Speaker Stutz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Dr. Hennessy, I'm not sure, maybe I didn't understand you or hear correctly, but I thought I heard you say that a mask or a vaccination or whatever it might be is not an absolute. It's one of the many things that are protective to people, but not one thing is the cure-all. Is that what I heard? And a mask definitely is a barrier, and is a one of many protective measures. Is that what I heard you say?
Through the chair, the speaker is correct, and that has been the approach to mitigation or prevention of spread of COVID all along, because we don't have one single thing that will absolutely protect everyone all the time. All of our control and mitigation strategies, including your policy for the legislature building, is based on layers of protection. And so the more layers you have in place, the greater the chances of reducing spread in your building, and you then lower the chance of legislators, staffers becoming ill and missing out on the vital business that you're charged with. So I think the speaker has it absolutely right that layers of protection, just as we have layers of protection in automobiles, layers of protection in COVID, the more you have, the better.
All All right. Other members who have not spoken on the topic who are seeking the floor? Representative Tilton, you are seeking the floor again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Hennessy, I guess my question then would be, because you're saying that it's about layers of protection, is there other, and I know that there are different studies coming from different sources all over the place, but is there anything that says that a mask actually contains the virus and has, any kind of proof that the mask has actually stopped that virus from becoming, I'm trying to think of the word of what I'm looking for here, but spreading more. If it takes layers of protection, then I'm assuming that there are no particular studies on any individual piece of that protection. And if there are, would you please let me know?
Through the chair, to the question, the virus is spread through respiratory droplets, and so small droplets of liquid that are transmitted when we speak or breathe, and they're caught up in the mask material. And so that's a physical mechanism of control of spread of the virus from a person who's infected and transmitting it. The Omicron virus, although it is more transmissible, it's due to the fact that people are spreading more viruses per particle, but the size of the virus has not changed, and the dynamics, the physical dynamics of stopping a particle from going beyond the mask is the same as it was for previous versions of the virus. So in a study done by the CDC last year, they showed that masks could block 50 to 80% of those respiratory droplets at the source of the person wearing them. And so that's really the physical mechanism behind it, is to contain those respiratory droplets from a person who might be infected but not know it. And then on the other side, of course, is to prevent those droplets from reaching somebody as they inhale the air around that person. So there, I believe, and the CDC has recently affirmed this, that there's very good evidence showing that masks do help prevent the transmission of COVID-19, and in particular, they reaffirmed this with the Omicron virus.
Follow up,
go ahead.
So you can't really point to any kind of study that shows that the mask have made a significant difference in containing the virus, though you believe that it does, but there's no supporting data that says that it actually does.
Through the chair, there are many publications that have provided the evidence, both in the laboratory and in the real world setting, that show that masks use has made a big difference. And in particular, this comes from information in the hospital setting, where we have lots of experience dealing with infectious patients, either with influenza or COVID-19 or tuberculosis, all of which where masks are important and in use. So some of the early evidence in COVID-19 came from hospitals that instituted mask policies and maintained them uniformly throughout the nation. So there's really no question about the value of masks in preventing transmission. And there are many studies, laboratory, real world, real hospital, within the United States, and I can gladly provide you with publications that show the evidence base surrounding masks.
Thank you, Dr. Hennessy, but I would also say that there's also many studies that do not support that outcome, and so I would again say that this is your opinion of the outcome of whether masks have significantly stopped the spread of the virus.
All right. Are there other members seeking the floor who have not spoken on the motion on masks in our policy?
Madam Chair, this is Senator Machicki.
Senator Machicki, go ahead.
I don't want anyone to be surprised that I'll be supporting voluntary mask wearing, but I'm not going to get into a balance or a battle of the science. For me, it's just simply about a little bit of hypocrisy on where people wear masks that serve in the legislature. I have, and I don't mean that negatively. I think everybody is trying to do their best to protect others and themselves. But I'll tell you, I'm at home. I'm coming to Juneau tomorrow. My kids are going to school with thousands of other kids. They're not wearing masks. There's basketball games going on and hockey games and events. In Juneau, folks are going out to different events and then coming in, wearing a mask for a little while, and then getting together after work. I mean, I don't think in this case, although I'm not going to debate the doctor because I think that there is some benefit to wearing masks, I'm going to vote for voluntary mask wearing simply because of the way we operate in Juneau and the reality of how those operations take place. So I've got some good friends on both sides here in this council. I just wanted to explain my vote. I don't think that behavior is going to change. Therefore, I think that in itself reduces the effectiveness of masks in the building.
Thank you. Other members? All right. I believe we are ready for a vote on the motion.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just got a note that some of the members online can't hear or have been muted somehow.
Take a brief at ease. So is it someone in particular? On, and we're going to just do a sound check, I guess. We have word that Senator Reinbold, can you hear us? Senator Schauer, can you hear us?
Oh.
We're going to get a brief at ease. I'm in order only to just try and do a sound check to see if we have lost everyone. Senator Machicki, can you still hear us? Senator Stevens? Senator Stedman? This is not a roll call vote. This is just a sound check. We know we've lost Representative Klayman. I've already asked Machicki. Representative Foster? Bishop? Okay. All right, we're going to at ease. And it appears that we're going to have. We're doing a sound check. Those that we lost, can you hear us now, Senator Reinbold? Senator Stevens? Can anyone on the council who has called in?
This is Senator Michicki. That was about my 9th or 10th call back in, and I can hear you.
Okay. Anybody else? We had lost all of ACS, went off for a minute here. So we have Senator Michicki able to call back in. Is there anyone else who's yet succeeded in calling back in?
Was it this Senator Bishop, was it due to no mask for the phone lines or what?
They coughed on it. So I'm gonna gavel us in and ask Ms. Kiesel to call the roll so we can see who we've been able to reestablish a connection with.
Representative Klayman. Representative Edgman. Representative Foster.
Here.
Speaker Stutes.
Here.
Representative Tilton.
Here.
Representative Tuck. Senator Bishop.
Here.
Senate President Michicki.
Here.
Senator Schauer. Senator Stedman. Senator Stevens. Vice Chair Reinbold. Chair Hannon.
I'm here.
Chair Hannon.
Yes, Senator Michicki, go ahead.
I'm saying this as a helpful suggestion and not one to torture you, but with is there any benefit to rescheduling this meeting for tomorrow while they work through the issues?
We're absolutely looking at that too. So I think I'm gonna just call it a recess, and we are going to try and see how people's so we are getting let's
Madam Chair, I've been off the line. Were you adjourning till later today or till tomorrow? What's this plan?
We would be till tomorrow afternoon because we're going to lose people getting on planes. But just hold on. I'm going to take a brief at ease. We're back in order. We currently do not have a full quorum online, and I am going to recess the meeting from today to a call of the chair, and we will begin communicating about availability tomorrow. I know that we had members who were getting on planes later this afternoon, this evening, so I am not asking you to all stay holding on the line and expecting to convene back in the next 2 hours. We will try and find a time slot tomorrow that we can reconvene.
Madam Chair, I have a question, Senator Stevens.
Go ahead, Senator Stevens.
So it's my understanding that, just to make sure where we're going here and where we are, it's my understanding that the current policy remains in effect until changed. Is that true?
That is correct, Senator Stevens.
Okay. Thank you, and I just encourage you not to meet tomorrow. I will be pretty much all day in the air, so I'd hope to be able to make the meeting. Maybe we should wait till we actually convene, until we all get down there.
So, Senator Stevens, I will just make sure you note, we do have an executive session scheduled, although our current COVID policy remains in place till we amend it, and we could take that up. The issue under the executive session has a very pressing clock related to it. Now, if so that would be why we
I'm pushing for us to try and find a time in the very near future to reconvene, because we don't actually have a very large window to address that if we're going to address it.
Madam Chair?
Senator Michicki?
Yeah, we'll stand by. Both issues are important. I recognize that folks are going to be traveling, but if you're, as you stated, your staff can check with us, I will, well, the plan is for me to land at around noon tomorrow, so we'll see where everybody is, but let us know, and we will make sure we make ourselves available to support the committee.
Thank you. So,
Madam Chair, it's just Representative Klayman with one note.
Representative Klayman.
In light of the special session matter, we may want to take that first on the agenda when we reconvene.
The executive session matter.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. And with that, I'm going to remind staff, if your bosses had not called back in and are not able to hear that please communicate that to them, because I know that there are still a number of members of the committee who have not been able to log back in, but I think that most of their staff are either here in the room or able to hear us within the building on teleconference. So please communicate that if your boss was not on the last roll call. And with that, we will stand at recess to a call of the chair.